Welcome to the Town Hall Review, brought to you by the Salem Media Group. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Having failed at health care reform, Republicans are scrambling to fix the tax code.
We want tax reform that is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, pro-family, and yes, tax reform that is pro-American.
Last week's dust-up between President Trump and a number of NFL players exploded into a national confrontation.
I think the NFL is completely under attack, and I think that there's an arrogance to the NFL. It's like CNN before there was any competition.
And the latest GOP attempt at health care reform appears dead on arrival.
There's a lot of energy for repealing Obamacare, and they miss on that opportunity not once but twice.
Plus, is there anything left of Puerto Rico?
It's almost like an ancient city. I mean, there's no light, nothing. It's horrible, and this is America. This is not some foreign country. This is Puerto Rico.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. You can hear my own program live each weekday morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern, and online via my site, hughhewitt.com. After much sound and fury and the collapse of the long-anticipated efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare, many, many voices were turned up very, very high. Fortunately, Republicans could retreat and turn to something at least as critical as Obamacare, tax cuts. With a Democratic senator by his side, the president flew to Indiana to unveil the agreed-upon framework.
It's time to take care of our people, to rebuild our nation, and to fight for our great American workers. Indiana is a tremendous example of the prosperity that is unleashed when we cut taxes and set free the dreams of our citizens. This state has claimed a powerful competitive edge built on low taxes and less regulation. And are we cutting regulation?
On the morning of the trip, I spoke with Mark Short, White House Director of Legislative Affairs, on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Let's turn to tax cuts. I believe there's a framework out there that I have been told by leadership on both Senate and House side is agreed to. Am I correct, Mark Short?
Yes. Framework has been agreed to, and the president will be rolling that out today in a speech in Indiana. I think that American people will be excited about the size of tax relief that he's trying to deliver for the American people. And I think one of the reasons for choosing Indiana, obviously, is that we need this to be a bipartisan bill. It'll be helpful if it is, and we are anxious to get Joe Donnelly's support for this effort. But additionally, Indiana is the home of Governor Mike Pence, who passed the largest tax relief in the history of the state of Indiana when he was governor. And I think it's an appropriate place in middle America to make our case to the American people as the way to get this economy growing again is to provide tax relief that they need.
Is the president doing a Babe Ruth on this one, pointing to the bleachers, picking his shot, saying it's going over the wall?
I think the president is really excited to be speaking about tax reform and the need for us to get this economy growing again. I think he believes that for far too long the corporate rates in America have been outdated, that our tax system provides a competitive disadvantage for American companies. It's a competitive advantage for foreign companies. It's why so many companies have fled the shores of America to relocate overseas. And it's time to bring those jobs back, Hugh. And providing that tax reform and tax relief is a first step in making sure that this economy is growing, but also that we're bringing jobs home, which is one of the promises the president was made and was central to his campaign.
It's got to pass. The Republicans need a win. They lost repeal and replace. Luther Strange lost. The Republicans are in retreat, aren't they, Mark? They need a win.
You know, I think that the American people are frustrated, Hugh, and I think rightly so. I think that there's the Republicans elected, I'd say the American people elected, a Republican House in 2010, a historic election, because the Americans were angry about Obamacare. Then in 2014, they turned around and elected Republicans to control the Senate for the first time in years, but it was a historic seat. I think it was nine seats that flipped in that election. There was a lot of energy for repealing Obamacare. In 2016, it was a large part of the presidential campaign, a large part of the president's platform. And so here we finally have our opportunity, and many members who had voted consistently again and again to repeal Obamacare when Obama was president, they have a president who will now sign it into law, and they miss on that opportunity not once but twice. I think there's enormous frustration that the American people have, and I think rightly so.
Now, Mark, that's four senators, though. That's Susan Collins and Rand Paul, John McCain and Lisa Murkowski. Is it fair for Mitch McConnell to get blamed for that?
I think you make a good point, and I think that it's fair to examine, you know, those four. I think that the Straight Talk Express drove off the road into a ditch on this. I think with Rand, there was a lot of things that we were excited about. I think having the ability to double health savings account contributions, eliminating individual mandates, eliminating employer mandates, providing perhaps the biggest entitlement reform in a generation, and also protections of life. This bill protected, it stopped the taxpayer funding of abortions and provided the flow of the block grants through programs that were protected under the Hyde Amendment. So this was a real opportunity for him to stick with his convictions on life, and yet I think that he was one of the central people that took down the opportunity to repeal Obamacare.
Now, the pivot to tax cuts is huge. I've been urging people to go to taxcutsnow.com and register their individual support, but you mentioned the groups. We have the Heritage Foundation. We have got the Club for Growth. We have FreedomWorks. Are the groups on board with the framework?
Yes, we've spent several months meeting with those groups and talking to them, getting their input, getting their advice, and I think that is something that's very different with this effort as opposed to where we were on the Obamacare repeal effort. And so, yes, the groups that you mentioned, Heritage, Club for Growth, FreedomWorks, Americans for Prosperity, are all anxious to see us deliver on tax reform and are very engaged and are actually helping us with rallies across the country, town halls for their activists, to make the case as to why this is important.
Unfortunately, President Trump has been more distracted than usual this past 10 days. The entire country has been distracted and edgy, especially professional sports teams and their fans. The issue is, from the fan perspective, why can't these enormously wealthy athletes show some respect for their country and their loyal fans, and especially the flag, honoring the flag upon the singing of the national anthem? Joe Concha, sitting in for me while I was away, spoke with Jason Whitlock of Fox Sports.
Did you watch that Niners-Rams game last night? Because a couple things out of that. I mean, if you Google pictures of the stadium at kickoff, and I get it's West Coast and it was 5:30 and maybe people were still in traffic or leaving work, but there couldn't have been more than 10,000 people in that stadium. Do you think maybe this is getting overblown a little bit as far as ratings being off and attendance, you know, in certain stadiums not being where it is? Or is this CTE thing and just problems in terms of perception from a public relations standpoint with the NFL is worse than maybe I'm giving it credit for?
Now, I think the NFL is completely under attack, and I think that there's an arrogance to the NFL. It's like CNN before there was any competition, and Fox News, we're CNN. And I think the NFL's getting blindsided. I think that there's a clear attack on football. There's a out-of-context discussion going on about CTE and concussions. There's an out-of-context conversation going on about the politicization of sports and what role the NFL should play in terms of what the social justice warriors want them to play. You know, I think the conversation about Colin Kaepernick completely out of context. There are a number of factors going on that are making it uncomfortable for traditional football fans just to watch and enjoy football, and I think it's impacting the ratings.
I know here in New York, you're a Giant fan. You're not thinking, you know what, I'm going to boycott the team because Kaepernick over in San Francisco kneeled during the national anthem. I don't know one Giant fan that thinks that way, but still, this thing seems to be airborne a little bit.
The actors on this television show, because that's all the NFL is, some of them are going way off script. And so when you start taking a knee during the national anthem and forcing a conversation about America and whether or not you like or think America's unfair, right in the middle of a television show that is celebrating all the best ideals about America, it's just off script. And so that's what Kaepernick did. The viewers who have been trained for 30, 40 years, oh, man, I'm about to have the most American experience in the world. I'm going to watch football and pop a beer and barbecue. And now they got Colin Kaepernick making them talk about, is America unfair? Are the police killing unarmed black men? They just don't want that. They just want football.
Meanwhile, some exciting programming is being added to our TV choices. Here's my colleague Michael Medved to explain.
Can President Trump do more to bring the country together? Now, I thought one of the folks who might help with that would be a unique Republican, somebody who, when he was a state's governor in a state that has a very substantial African-American population, as a Republican, actually won 48% of the African-American vote. Who's that guy? His name is Huckabee. And 11 years of leadership that, according to most people who watch from in-state and out-of-state, served the state of Arkansas very well. Of course, people know Mike Huckabee. And right now he is launching a brand new TV show. And I understand that your show, which launches on Trinity Broadcasting Network on October 7th, you have an interesting guest for your first show.
Well, we couldn't get any real newsmakers to debut the show, so President Trump has agreed to come. I just hope he tweets about it, because if he does that, we'll have more eyeballs watching that show than we ever could hope for.
You were remarkably successful for a conservative Republican in reaching a community that has been problematic for most Republican candidates, and certainly for our presidential candidates, which is the African-American community. You won 48% as governor of Arkansas. So if President Trump were to sit down with you, what would you tell him?
Michael, I would tell him that, use the old classic line from church, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. If you do what you're supposed to do, the politics really will take care of itself. I'm afraid that Republicans have historically tried to go into the African-American community the month before the election and say, oh, just want to let you know we're here. You know, we really care. But they're saying, well, where were you for the past 3.5 years? And so I think it's a matter of, I would say to the president, spend time, listen, but marshal resources. There are real needs in the African-American community when it comes to employment, disproportionate share of incarceration. Some of it is because they're underrepresented when they go to trial. So to sum it all up, realize that there are needs in the black community that really need attention. And it's not about giving them more government programs. I think that's the mistake we've made.
Coming up.
It's almost like an ancient city. I mean, there's no light, nothing. It's horrible. And this is America. This is not some foreign country. This is Puerto Rico.
Robert Costa, when the Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
An inspiring story of one man's journey to save the world, one child at a time.
I see impossible becoming possible.
Mully, in select cinemas nationwide, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Buy tickets now at mullymovie.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you miss any part of our program, go to townhallreview.com for the full episode. While you're there, take a moment to sign up for our podcast. It really is the best of the best in conservative talk radio. We need to focus on all of those impacted by a series of natural disasters all throughout the Western Hemisphere. No sooner had Hurricanes Harvey and Irma inflicted their toll, then came Hurricane Maria, ripping apart our American territory, Puerto Rico. Robert Costa of the Washington Post joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. I have two big questions for you. The first is about Hurricane Maria's impact on Puerto Rico and whether or not this could become Donald Trump's Katrina. And the second, of course, about the NFL and Donald Trump. Let's start with Puerto Rico. Because the power is out and cell phones are rare, people only have the glimmer of what has happened down there. I think it's worse than Katrina, Irma, and Harvey combined. I think it is an Andrew-like situation. Is the president doing enough? Does he risk a Katrina here if he doesn't do more?
He certainly does. And this is the talk on Capitol Hill right now. What needs to be done with Puerto Rico? People feel because of it, they're not seeing it on cable news. The lawmakers I'm talking to, Republicans and Democrats, say it's time to act, but they're not really sure what to do, what needs to be done. But this is a huge test for the administration. I think we're only in this early stage where we really know what's going on.
I think they need to send a carrier there to create clean water and power. For one thing, you can create power off of aircraft carriers. That's why they go to disasters. But just airlifts and things. The Jeffrey Goldberg pictures, Robert Costa, are that the Atlantic posted are just mind-boggling, actually.
They really are. It's so tragic, and it's just it's almost like an ancient city. I mean, there's no light. It's horrible, and this is America. This is not some foreign country. This is Puerto Rico.
And people have got to worry about the decay of civil order. That is, people become desperate. They will take desperate measures, and therefore, I do think the president's at political peril, but the humanitarian cause here is what really ought to motivate us. Let's turn to the NFL. Donald Trump, first he tweeted out, ratings for NFL football are way down, except before game starts when people tune in to see whether or not our country will be disrespectful. Then he tweeted out, the booing at NFL football game last night when the entire Dallas team dropped to its knees was loudest I have ever heard. Great anger. Then he tweeted out, but while Dallas dropped to its knees as a team, they all stood up for our national anthem. Big progress being made. We all love our country. That, to me, seems the key that maybe Jerry Jones came up with a way out of the box canyon. If you lose Budweiser America, and that is possible at this moment, you lose a lot, and you don't get them back. The marginal fan, but even hardcore fans like Selena Zito's dad, an 80-year Pittsburgh Steelers fan who turned off the game and said he'll never watch again. Does the NFL, do you think, Robert Costa, have any connection into Budweiser America, or are they up in their tower in New York City isolated from the Trump electorate?
I think they do have a connection to Budweiser America, but there is also real challenges in this country that their players are trying to show some connection to with the deaths of young African-American men and the tensions with police. And so if you're an NFL executive, you have to have that connection with Budweiser America, but you also have to have compassion, at least some of them say, with the way that these events are unfolding in urban America. And so there's no easy answer. If you're a head of a team, if you turn to one side entirely, you risk the wrath of the other side.
And it seems to me that there is a middle ground. LeBron hit it yesterday. LeBron basically compared me, a Trump voter, to his giving too many Skittles to his children yesterday. I don't care. I don't care what LeBron thinks about politics. I want him to play basketball for the Cavs. But I also want everyone to stand for the national anthem. And the Jones solution seems to me to be elegant, even though there are naysayers on Twitter this morning. Oh, he deserted the cause, and I'll never root for the Cowboys again. Trump seemed to embrace it. Do you think he wants out of this as well?
I think that Trump was trying to make a point. And candidly, based on my reporting, I think the president was looking for a distraction, that he wants to make a broader point about the flag and nationalism and patriotism. But at the same time, he sees an Alabama Senate race that's not going well. He sees health care stalled. He sees tax reform moving pretty slowly. And so the president has had a history of bringing up cultural grievances and different issues whenever he's had a little bit of a political squall over him.
Aside from all the natural disaster, there's another storm that's been circling our nation's capital. This one is political. It's about Russia and wiretapping and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. And it could even have Obama administration era fingerprints on it. This is according to Larry Klayman, founder of Judicial Watch and now Freedom Watch. Klayman is the guest of my Salem colleague, Larry Elder.
Two warrants from FISA for Paul Manafort. Donald Trump said that he was being wiretapped by the Obama administration. I guess he was right.
Absolutely true, Larry. You know, we have a client, Dennis Montgomery, we talked about it on an earlier show, who came forward with 47 hard drives, 600 million pages of information, NSA CIA contractor, more information than Edward Snowden, and he said this was happening for years, particularly during the administration of Barack Obama. So this is no surprise. And what we now see here is something much worse than Watergate. I call it a super Watergate, because this obviously was intended to get into the Trump campaign. Even though Hillary Clinton was thought to be the eventual winner, they wanted some insurance, much like Richard Nixon wanted in Watergate, even though he was well ahead of George McGovern at the time. These politicians just can't let it lie. They can't let it take its course. They've got to try to fix things. And that's what happened here.
Do you think these reporters now, in their heart of hearts, feel that Trump has been vindicated? Or do you think there's some excuse that they're still making?
Well, they always knew in their heart of hearts that Trump was right. The fact is, they're ideological individuals who are trying to destroy the Trump presidency, along with special counsel Robert Mueller, various Democrats, and others. And they don't care about the truth. And that's why the president's also right, and you're right, Larry, to call it fake news, because that's what it is. They spin. They're not interested in the truth, and they'll never accept that. But look, we've got something here much worse than Watergate. And are they calling for an investigation of this? And where is our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions? He's afraid that he's going to be indicted, having been said that he had perjured himself in front of Congress about meetings with the Russian ambassador, which, you know, what's wrong with meeting with the Russian ambassador? But he's still afraid of that. And there needs to be heads rolling here, not just our lawsuit. I did bring a lawsuit against Comey and the intelligence agencies for matters related to this. You can see that at freedomwatchusa.org. But where's our attorney general? We need heads to roll. People need to be investigated and prosecuted, frankly, for this gross abuse of our Constitution.
My guess is Larry Klayman. He's the head of a watchdog group called Freedom Watch. Okay, Larry, where does the investigation stand right now? What's going on right now?
Well, Mueller is leaking like a sieve. I mean, every day there are two or three reports of what he's doing. As you know, Larry, you're a lawyer. That's a violation of Rule 6E of the Rules of Criminal Procedure. It's criminal in and of itself. And this investigation is out of control, and the Inspector General saying, investigate this and have the department remove Mueller as general counsel. He is violating his oath of office.
Paul Manafort, I'm hearing over and over again, Larry, that the deal is to put heat on Manafort so he flips on Trump. What does he have to flip on him about?
That's an excellent point. He probably doesn't have anything to flip on him about, but they're using that as a vehicle to wiretap Trump and everybody in and around Trump. He's the fall guy. I believe that Manafort is just one aspect of the wiretapping. They probably have tapped Stone. They probably have tapped everybody in and around Trump. And frankly, they may even tap Trump directly. Certainly Donald J. Trump is in that locus, too. We're out of control. This is an Orwellian police state that we live in, and it's very, very dangerous and frightening.
Assume the Democrats take control of the House. That means they've got to vote for impeachment. That means then it goes to the Senate. You need two-thirds to throw Donald Trump out of office. It's not going to happen, no matter what Mueller comes up with.
No, you're absolutely right, Larry. It won't happen. They never get the top guy. We've never taken the top guy out yet. It's a weakness in our system. The framers were enlightened, but in this one they didn't get it right because in an appropriate circumstance, like with Clinton, they should have removed the guy. But what it does is it immobilizes the Trump presidency at a time that we're facing threats from North Korea,
right,
Iran, and elsewhere. And that's the real tragedy to the American people.
Coming up.
You know, it's cheaper to let people die rather than getting treatment. And this all has to do with cost and the government setting global budgets, because no private health care is allowed in Canada for anything provided under the Canada Health Act.
We will put Canadian health care under the microscope when the Town Hall Review continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Jim Daly with Focus on the Family. Join us at a theater near you on October 3rd, 4th, or 5th to see Mully, a new film that will inspire thousands to embrace the cause of orphans worldwide. Buy your tickets now at focusonthefamily.com/Mully.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. From socialist Sacramento to the Green Mountains of Vermont, Bernie Sanders proclaims his health care dream. It is, among other things, called single-payer. Citizens are no doubt quizzical about the toll single-payer would take on their lives and their pocketbooks, not to mention their health. Bernie and his disciples argue, just look to our neighbor to the north, meaning Canada. Larry Elder turned to a healthcare expert from Canada who knows their system very well. Sally Pipes is the president of the Pacific Research Institute.
Why is it the Canadians apparently love their healthcare system so much?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons, Larry. One, you know, Canadians are very patient, very nice people. I mean, my mom used to say to me after I'd moved to the U.S. and been here a few years, I hope you're not becoming one of those impatient Americans, which, of course, I am. So Canadians are very patient and sort of like Brits. When you're told something, or if you're told by a receptionist in a doctor's office, you can't, you know, get an MRI for, you know, you have to wait 20 weeks between seeing a primary care doctor and getting treatment by a specialist. Canadians say, well, thank you. That's the way it is. But of course, as we know, 52,000 Canadians a year out of a population of 36 million leave Canada and come to the United States to pay out of pocket for treatments and surgeries, MRIs, CT scans, because they feel the wait in Canada is too long. You know, it's cheaper to let people, you know, die rather than getting treatment. And this all has to do with the cost and the government setting global budgets, because no private health care is allowed in Canada for anything provided under the Canada Health Act.
Ms. Pipes, your co-panelist, the one who was supporting the Canadian health care system, Dr. Danielle Martin, did not know how many Canadians died on waiting lists, but she certainly knew how many Americans, or how many Americans she assumed, died because they didn't have health care insurance. Didn't you find that interesting?
Very interesting. And she did, you know, basically admit, well, yes, I realize there are waiting lists in Canada, but basically, well, that's just the way it is. Well, you know, it shouldn't be that way. And, you know, the waits as I mentioned, are very long. And also, you know, 17% of Canadians are on a waiting list just trying to get a primary care doctor. You cannot, in Canada, if you think you want to see your cardiologist or your neurologist or whatever, you don't just call up, you know, Dr. Elder, the nurse, and say, I'd like to come in and, you know, have them do an MRI of my brain. You have to go to that primary care doctor first, and then that doctor decides, you know, whether you need to see a cardiologist or a neurologist. So under Bernie's Medicare for All 2017 Act, of course, his plan is so much more comprehensive than even the Canadian system, because he wants to provide dental coverage, vision care, prescription drugs, and long-term care. None of those things is provided under the Canada Health Act, because when Paul Martin was the Liberal Prime Minister, he wanted to bring in some of these things. And when he was elected, he figured out how much more it would cost, and it just wasn't possible to do. So
my question, isn't that the goal? The goal for Howard Dean, the goal for Obama, the goal for Harry Reid, publicly stated, is single-payer a la the Canadian healthcare system?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I always felt from the beginning, you know, the Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which does neither, was signed into law on March 23rd, 2010. But I always felt that it was President Obama's goal that, you know, they would try the private exchanges. And, of course, they wouldn't work. Premiums would be way up, deductibles. And as a result, it's now time, you know, to go to a single-payer Medicare for All system. Remember, in the original House bill, there was that Nancy Pelosi, she was Speaker, put in the public option, but it was struck from the bill at the Senate level. So they always wanted, that was a long-term goal, and that's why I think, you know, Bernie Sanders has, you know, released on September 13th his mm-hmm. his bill, mm-hmm. which, of course, he said, I'm not including how much it's going to cost, nor did he include how it was going to be paid for. But we all know, based on his bill from when he was running against Hillary for the Democratic nomination, the Urban Institute, not a free market think tank, costed it out at $32 trillion over 10 years. That's $3.2 trillion a year, which is exactly the same amount we spend today on healthcare, $3.2 trillion, 18% of our GDP. So he's really talking about doubling it.
What is it about the Canadian healthcare system that makes people like Howard Dean and Bernie Sanders such fans?
People like Howard Dean and Harry Reid and Bernie Sanders, they have a vision of how American society should be structured, in my view. And I think it is that they believe government can provide all services better than the private sector. I mean, look at, I was debating Uwe Reinhardt from Princeton a couple of years ago, and he interrupted my talk and said, well, Sally, we have an example of a single-payer healthcare system in this country. This is about 4 years ago, and it works so very well. And I said, well, Uwe, which program is that? And he said, it's the VA. And if you've been following the news in the last couple of years, the VA has all of the same problems, cost overruns, long waiting lists for care. Even with the Veterans Choice Act, vets are still waiting much longer than the 30 days before they can go to a private clinic than is specified in the Choice Act. So, you know, I think it's what they believe, that really society should be run by government.
Coming up.
Not the entire country of Syria is a ceasefire, but there's one area, huge, because we can get humanitarian aid in there. You can do the demining. So that's one area where we're at least doing some work together to try to bring peace. And then the goal is to piece that together.
Heather Nauert takes us inside the Department of State. The Town Hall Review returns in a moment. Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. The State Department was very visible during the Obama administration. First, Secretary Clinton gave Russia a reset button. Remember that? Then Secretary John Kerry pushed the Department of State to help undermine the security interests of his own country with the Iranian nuclear accord. Both Secretaries Clinton and Kerry were quite visible. Our new Secretary Rex Tillerson has been very busy, but not much of it is on camera. Joe Concha, filling in for Michael Medved, turned to Heather Nauert, the new State Department spokesperson.
I've always said being a spokesperson or a press secretary is the hardest white-collar job in the world, to take questions from reporters, particularly in this environment, in this administration, who just want to get you in the gotcha moment just once. It's a tough job. How do you train for something like that?
I think actually working in the news business was pretty good training for it, because when you prepare For interview segments, you prepare for a show, you have to have a certain depth of knowledge on all topics that could potentially come up. When it's breaking news, it's just breaking news, and you just kind of go with it and go with the facts that you have as you have them. And what's different about this is that you just have to have a much deeper knowledge base of the issues. And then you have an entire team that supports you and surrounds you. We have, you know, the experts in all our various bureaus who, some of them just focus on one country, for example. So you have the best people who are briefing you, and that really does it.
Did you find it weird? Because I saw you this week. You're in New York, and you're on Fox and Friends, for instance, and you used to mm-hmm. work for the show. And then mm-hmm. you're on CNN. You're with Ali Camerata, who used to be a Fox and Friends weekend host. And was it, for lack of a better word, a bit weird being the one being interviewed instead of the person either delivering the news or conducting the interview?
A little bit, yeah. This week in New York, I was here with Secretary Tillerson for the UN General Assembly. And so had the opportunity to go back to Fox and be interviewed on Maria Bartiromo's show on Fox Business, on Fox and Friends, went to CNN. And then went to ABC over to Good Morning America. And I had worked at Good Morning America, and of course I worked at Fox News as well. And so walking back in there, seeing my colleagues and friends and going on their show and getting grilled was a fun experience, but it was a little unusual being on the other side.
I'll bet. Tell us something about Rex Tillerson that, you know, I think he's a little bit of an enigma. He doesn't do a lot of interviews, and I can respect that. And obviously, he ran Exxon forever, so it's kind of different having a private citizen in the Secretary of State role. Mm-hmm. But what's something that you could, that getting to know Rex Tillerson, that you have found out or discovered that not a lot of people at home probably know or would appreciate?
And you know what, I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, we'll get a lot of criticism from some in the media that he isn't on television all the time, isn't constantly doing television interviews. And here's the thing about him. He had an extremely successful life previously. He has said himself, you know, look, I made a lot of money in my time at Exxon. And he's not in this job to try to get to some higher office. He's not in this job because he wants to become president of the United States. He's not in this job because he wants to write a book or make more money. He's in this job because this is the way that he feels he can best serve this country at this time. So he doesn't need all those accolades. He doesn't need all that attention. And I think people, especially in Washington and especially in New York, don't understand the kind of person, the kind of politician, if you will, who doesn't crave the spotlight. So he really prefers to work behind the scenes, and I'm with him in a lot of these meetings when he's with foreign leaders. And he is tough, and he is effective, and he pushes people really hard when they need to be pushed, and other times he's gentle when he can afford to be so. So I think that's the biggest thing about him. He's not, you know, the person who's, you know, just dying to become the next president of the United States. He is happy in his job. He does it well. And he has said that when he's done with his job as Secretary of State, he'll go back to his ranch and be a grandfather.
It sounds like a nice life, but I agree with you. I think that's more of a media bubble kind of complaint that, you know, he's not doing enough press conferences. I think John Kerry, I had to hear from him, you know, four or five times a day, it seemed, there is such a thing about being overexposed. And plus, you know, what you do behind the scenes and what you tell the press, particularly when negotiations are very sensitive, it's going to be night and day anyway. So it's almost, I'm not going to say pointless, but you don't have to be in front of a microphone every other minute. So I can certainly appreciate that. This is Joe Concha with Heather Nauer. She, of course, is the State Department spokesperson. Hey, Heather, I want to play a clip of you on CNN with Ali Camerata, and I want to make a point around media and how they focus on one thing that I don't find to be all that significant, or at least they go after the shiny object, and you pivoted back to what's truly important and progress that the Trump administration is making in one part of the world. Can we play that clip, guys? Heather Nauert with CNN's Ali Camerata.
The president this morning tweeted, "This Russia stuff is a hoax." So where's the State Department on this?
Well, the State Department doesn't get involved in that particular issue per se, but we certainly will call out Russia for its activities.
The State Department doesn't believe it's a hoax.
Look. Does believe what?
Does not believe it's a hoax. Does not believe that Russia's meddling is a hoax.
It is clear, and this administration and the entire government has been clear, that Russia meddled in the campaigns, in the election. That is inappropriate, okay? Absolutely inappropriate. No one takes issue with that whatsoever.
The president does.
No one takes issue with that whatsoever. What they did, and the president has been clear, the administration has been clear, was wrong. We continue to have conversations with the Russian government about many activities that they are involved with, and we continue to look for areas where we can work together with the Russian government. And that would include Syria, for example, where we have a ceasefire that is held for more than 2 months now. That is a significant opportunity and a great opportunity to try to eventually bring peace to Syria.
Now, think about this, everybody at home, for a moment, and what Heather just explained. There is a ceasefire in Syria that has held for 2 months. It was a genocide over there. Women, children, innocent people. We saw the pictures from the fighting over the summer before the ceasefire took place. And no one wants to talk about that. And Heather had to bring that up in the conversation. Instead, everybody, and including in this case the CNN interview, focuses on what Trump had tweeted that morning, which he said that the Russia hoax continues. Now it's ads on Facebook. What and look, that's a subjective thing you can look at that with. The Russia hoax continues, now it's ads on Facebook. From a logical standpoint, I think the president was talking about the fact that it's trying to be sold in the media by in many circles that Russia somehow changed the face of this election, including through ads on Facebook, like they changed those votes in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan. And then what Heather did was like, look, oh, by the way, people aren't being slaughtered anymore. And by working with the Russians, we actually achieved something in Syria. Am I warm on this one, Heather, in terms of the media missing big stories, important stories in this situation?
I'm so glad you asked about that, because I think you're absolutely right. And I just want to be clear that not the entire country of Syria is a ceasefire, but there's one area where there's a ceasefire, and that's huge because
most of the fighting was happening, right?
Yeah, we can get humanitarian aid in there. You can start to do the demining because ISIS laid a lot of bombs and explosives in schools and homes and all of that. So that's one area where we're cooperating, and not cooperating, that's the wrong word, but where we're at least doing some work together to try to bring peace. And then the goal is, I just want to tell you about our overall strategy, to try to find other pockets in Syria where the United States and the coalition partners can do exactly the same thing. You know, it doesn't happen overnight, but the goal is to piece that together.
Coming up.
He's rescued thousands and thousands of children, and the way he did it is so fascinating, and this movie is fantastic.
Charles Mullen, dad of the world's largest family. Stay tuned for the final segment of the Town Hall Review.
First thing I remember, I was lying in my bed. Couldn't have been no more than one or two.
An inspiring story of one man's journey to save the world, one child at a time.
I see impossible becoming possible.
Mully, in select cinemas nationwide, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Buy tickets now at mullymovie.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review. I'm Hugh Hewitt. For decades, Kenya has been a destination for migrants fleeing tyranny and famine in Sudan, Somalia, and surrounding countries. This, along with drought and drugs and disease, have taken their toll, leading to a huge population of homeless children. My colleague Mike Gallagher recently spent time with Dr. Charles Mully, who decided to invest in those children.
I got to watch a movie last night that was one of the most inspirational movies I think I've ever seen. I had heard about Dr. Charles Mully before and the work that he's done through his incredible, inspirational organization. He's sort of considered the dad of the world's largest family. He's rescued thousands and thousands of children, and this movie is fantastic. Here's a little bit of what it sounds like.
Dad says that he needed to sell everything and start helping the poor in the society, the children who are abandoned.
How do you let go of what you hold dearly? And how do you decide when to share your love?
All of us would love to change the world. Dr. Charles Mully has. He's the subject of this award-winning documentary that, again, is going to be available in theaters all over the country October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Let's welcome, on our guest line, Dr. Charles Mully, the subject of this tremendous movie and a story that will inspire you. Dr. Mully, thank you very much for joining us here on the Mike Gallagher Show. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm so happy to be with you today in this show.
I was moved by the movie last night deeply, and I don't want to give too much of it away, but of course, at the age of 40, you were a successful businessman in Kenya. You said, you know what? God is calling me to do something else. God is calling me to rescue orphans from the throes of poverty. Everybody thought you were crazy.
Oh, yes. Thank you very, very much. I'm very humbled to be in your station and be able to testify what really God has done to me and the fact that he touched me completely to turn around and be able to listen to his voice and the move on rescuing the children in Africa, children who were abandoned, children who orphans and children who have been rejected by societal families, and therefore I took a responsibility. I took a step of faith, and I feel so good in serving these dear ones.
The film Mully is a treat for everyone. Moving, inspirational, the entire family should go and see it. It will be in theaters for 3 days only this coming week, October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. To learn more, go to mullymovie.com. That's M-U-L-L-Y movie.com. That's it for our program today. Catch up on past episodes at our website, townhallreview.com. Subscribe to our podcast while you're there and never miss an episode. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin, producers Charlie Richard, David Posey, and Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Join us next week for another edition of Town Hall Review, the Week in Review program from a perspective you can trust.